Welcome to episode 7 of Owl and Fowl's Norwich City Football Club We Meet Again series, the podcast which looks back at the history between Norwich City and our Championship opponents this season. Although, as most of you will know in our previous 6 podcasts, we tend to just see where the conversation takes us. We cover off a number of wider issues and topics around the beautiful game in general, but we always try and link these back to Norwich and the team we are facing that weekend. So a bit of context, we record these in, or pre-record these in batches. So we recorded the first 6 episodes back in late August before the season had started. You may notice that they're not always completely relevant to what's actually happening on the pitch. I pulled out an example, Fowl. So I sort of said, if before the Bournemouth game, Daniel Farker had left to join Ipswich, that same week we signed Lionel Messi, and the club announces a relocation from Norwich to Cromer, it wouldn't get mentioned in the in the Bournemouth episode.
So obviously today there's been a bit of breaking news about the potential of Max Aarons going to Barcelona. So there could have been some sort of swap deal there. I think Messi's unsettled. So, I mean, I think Weber could have worked a bit harder on that one, get Messi in. So I'd like to have seen that one, yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of that angle. I'd heard the Aarons link, but good point. Yeah, so I thought it's useful to give a bit of context. And it would also explain why our score predictions are likely to be miles out, because we've got no form to base those on. So that's our caveat there. So I prefer to come up and do these from the live from the recording studio in Fowl's kitchen. Create a bit better connection and a bit better atmosphere. So it's been a few weeks since we did the first 6. So Fowl, what have you been up to? Give me a lowdown on your life over the last few weeks.
So basically I was on holiday.
Still
on
holiday. Caribbean?
Well, the plan Australia? Was Spain, but it actually turned out to be Minehead in Somerset, which was very beautiful, but resulted
still
in...
Still by the sea?
Yeah, exactly. By the sea. It was beautiful weather, sunshine, beach holiday, and walking. It wasn't Spain, obviously, because of quarantine, but... You know, we're adapting to life in this strange world we're still in.
I thought you might use that time to explore options, record this on location somewhere, hopefully on the Gold Coast or Florida.
Yeah, but I'm still hoping, our dream is to do the Ashes away. That's my dream anyway, next year. So the plan is that we become international superstars and we get to do, Ashes away, we meet again. And so that's the plan.
Well, one step at a time.
Yeah,
let's try and get out of your kitchen. In Halston first.
Yeah, we'll aim for,
see where it takes us.
Yeah, maybe the spare room's the next target and then we'll move on from there, yeah.
But yeah, me and Fowl have lofty ambitions. I fear we may end up being disappointed in the long run, but you've got to dream big, haven't you?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Saturday night, prime time.
If you aim for the stars and hit the moon, that's decent, isn't it? Yeah, that's fine. We'll take that.
Sounds like a Daniel Farker team talk.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, good that you've managed to get away and have a bit of a break. So, like I say, we're actually recording this minutes after the full-time whistle's blown for the Preston game. So Fowl's obviously high on emotion. They say you should never interview managers so soon after a game. Emotions are running high and you don't quite know what sort of reaction you're going to get. But I'm going to gamble, Fowl. So give me your thoughts hot after the final whistle.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we're still not quite clicked into gear yet, have we? Huddersfield, I think I predicted a defeat and a draw against Preston. So it wasn't too far out. Obviously, Huddersfield last week, I thought they were there for the taking. I thought they're quite a poor side, actually. We're much worse than I thought they're going to be.
It was comfortable, wasn't it?
But we haven't really clicked yet, have we? I think that's the thing. And it's going to take a few weeks for that to happen. You know, some of the signings, some look better than others. I'm not convinced by the left-back yet. Quintilla,
I think Quintilla... I know his corners and dead ball got praised, but you got to have a lot more about your game. But I don't think you could say, oh, he looks good because he can put a good corner in. It should be expected from anyone.
No, that's absolutely true. So I think it's nice to have someone who's decent from set pieces, but I mean, it's got to be more about a fullback than that for me. Skip looks on the money to me. He looks probably good.
I thought Preston looked better than Huddersfield.
Yeah, Preston, I think we both agree on this one, don't we? They're quite a well-organised side. I mean, I believe they're top 8, probably, I'd guess. They look like a side that knows how to get results out of this league rather than one that's going to storm it like we did a couple of years ago.
The other big news since we last recorded was Jamal Lewis to Newcastle. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, good move for him. I was very pleased the club stood their ground over the transfer fee from Liverpool, because that wasn't, I think we valued him at £20 million, yeah, which is obviously, you know, a target rather than, but I think Liverpool's offer was 8 million plus add-ons, wasn't it, to bring it up to about 10. So that was obviously, our £20 million was pie in the sky, but we were a long way away from each other. So I'm very pleased the club stood their ground. And I personally think from Lewis's point of view, he's going to get a lot more game time at Newcastle. Yeah.
Well, he's already played one game.
Exactly.
I'd imagine he's probably first choice left back.
Certainly seems to be, without knowing too much about Newcastle, that certainly seems to be the case. And hopefully that'll give him a platform to kick on. So, you know, two or three, I mean, he's still young, isn't he? What is he, 19, 20? Well, I don't know how old he is, but he's a youngster. So in a couple of seasons' time, 23, 24, you know, if he's playing well, he'll be knocking on the door for Liverpool's and whatever anyway. What are your thoughts? Are you pleased about him going there, fair price tag?
Yeah, I think so. I get the impression most Norwich fans wish him well.
Yeah.
There's no animosity towards him. I think it feels like a good move for him. We probably wouldn't have got 20 million. I think transfers are complicated these days. I think there's always add-ons. And, you know, we've got a bit of cover there. The squad's looking quite deep.
Well, until the news came through about Byron is now out until January.
Yeah, that was a blow. I'm worried about Byron. I said to you, he's got a bit of the Matthew Jarvis.
Unfortunately, I agree with you.
I can't see him ever getting a run now.
And also, yeah, I 100% agree. And that's the worry. He's obviously a very talented player, like Matt Jarvis was. It's just about keeping him fit. So that's the question right now.
I would have been more than happy for him to be our first choice left back this season. He's almost, in some aspects, better than Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, so we said this against them when we watched the Man City game together, because I think Aarons was out and he played right back. So I think he's a right footer, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
We actually said that in some ways he's so good defensively, it's almost a bonus having him in over Aarons for the Man City game.
Yeah.
So he does offer that. He's a very good player, but obviously injuries.
And of course, he kept Lewis out until he got injured himself.
Against Liverpool. As you reminded me today. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good move for Lewis, good move for Newcastle. I think it's one of these rare examples where everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
I think the club got its fair share for a transfer fee for him. I think we've got potential cover. Time will tell, I guess.
Agreed. And here's someone who, if and when he returns to Carrow Road, he'll be applauded back again.
I don't think we keep you in the dark about who our next opponents are in the episode that we're doing. So,
I mean, I could have looked at the fixture list, but I haven't.
Yeah. It wouldn't have taken much to work it out. But you like, Fowl likes, he performs best off the cuff.
Ad lib.
Doesn't he? Ad lib, yeah.
The only, obviously, X factor we've got on this is that if there's sort of some sort of COVID outbreak and the fixtures gets changed.
It could all get very confusing if there's further lockdowns.
Yeah. So this might be obviously recorded not at the time of the game and also out of order as well.
Yeah.
So we've got
no idea what it was. Yeah, this game might end up being played in sort of 2022.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
we'll have to cross that bridge. If we come to it. Yeah, so Fowl doesn't know. I guess before we start, how are we going with Fowl's being promoted to our marketing manager and head of promotion? How are we doing with the star guests? Have you got someone lined up behind the door, about to walk in?
Well, I mean, I thought you were talking about, obviously, the Twitter as well, because I've just asked on Twitter for people to tell us their thoughts on today's game. Which has so far had no likes or replies to that tweet. So we'll see what happens in the next podcast. But yeah, so that is, if you want to follow us, that's at Al and Val We Meet One. Okay.
Yeah. Sounds like a dating site.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of, well, actually it is. No, and in terms of the big stars and working with Rancic still, she seems to be available.
He's got time in his hands.
He's got time in his hands. I want to get some hair tips off him. It's very pretty.
Yeah, where are we at with getting a few ex-players on board, squad.
So far, no luck on ex-players, managers, coaching staff, or affiliates with the club. But my friend Sarah does want to come on to talk about the players' haircuts, so we've got that in the bag.
Okay, Sarah, we'll put you on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we get to sort of episode 16, 17.
Yeah, then you're in.
And it's still me and you and the dog.
Yeah.
We'll get you in, Sarah. And we'd love to talk haircuts, actually, I think. Premier League haircuts and Championship haircuts completely different level, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I've got to bring this. We're far too football knowledgeable to get dragged down to fashion and haircuts. So I'm going to bring this down to the
give us a couple of weeks
our area of expertise. Next up, episode 7, newcomers to the Championship. This is a historic season for them. It's their first ever at this level. It's Wycombe Wanderers. And I wanted to first mention, all fans have found it tough during this period of not being able to go and see their team play. But, Fal, imagine how hard it's been for Wycombe fans in that, firstly, they missed out on the end of the season run up to, you know how exciting it is when you're in the promotion hunt. A huge end of the season. There have been some huge games that they've just missed out on. I don't know if you know that they actually got up via the playoffs.
I did know that, yeah. I saw it because I was watching on TV because it's not been a lot else to do during that period in my life, to be fair.
I don't know if you know the geography, but they beat Oxford at Wembley in the playoff final, and Oxford's actually just up the road from Wycombe. I mean, I don't think they're historically rivals because they're, you know, Wycombe were non-league for years and years. But again, to miss out, I mean, we went to Wembley for the playoff final, and we've both said it's one of the highlights of our football following life, isn't it?
Without doubt.
They've missed out on that trip to Wembley. They've missed out on the biggest game in the club's entire history. They've missed out on the fact it was local rivals as well. What an anticlimax for them. And now they're missing out on their first experience of playing at that level.
Yeah, I think they got well beaten today by Blackburn.
I think they lost 5-0, 5-6 at Blackburn, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, okay, it's early days in the season, so you can't write them off yet. But, I mean, if this is going to be their only season here for a while, which could well be, that's, it's a real shame. And it's such a shame that the pandemic's having that. The thing is with football is it's those moments, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And, you know,
and you don't know, you might go another 20 years before you get them again.
Exactly. So I felt last year, the Man City home game, it's just such an amazing moment. And you're just irrelevant of what happened, you know, beyond the season. It was just so great to be there. And yeah, they're missing out on that. And we're all missing out on that. But yeah, it's a real shame. I really feel for them.
Yeah, I think when I was thinking about this, they're probably missing out, like I say, because of all those factors. We're missing out, but are we really missing out on anything we haven't seen before? You know, we're missing Preston at home.
Exactly.
We're missing clubs at the end of last season that we've seen many a time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like we're Bradford in the Premier League, is it? It's like,
no.
We all want to be there, but, you know, for someone like Wycombe, yeah, you've got to feel for them. And that day at Wembley was such a great day for us.
I was trying to ourselves in their shoes. Imagine if we'd watched that Wembley experience from your front room.
Yeah.
The stadium's empty.
On iFollow,
yeah. And I was trying to think, the last time we would have had those feelings of something we'd never experienced before. So obviously we've played at every level football league. So it must be quite strange going into a league for the first time ever and what that would feel like. The only thing I could equate it to is obviously our debut season in Europe.
Yeah, that's exactly
that mystique, isn't it?
And imagine, although interestingly, that's absolutely the example that sprung to mind, but just to show you how much football's changed. I mean, I don't know if I can quickly find out the stats, but at home against VSS Arnhem, it was like half empty the ground, wasn't it?
I was there. Oh, that was doing my part. I think there was about 15,000-16,000 there.
Yeah, someone talked about it on Twitter recently. Yeah, it wasn't. So obviously it's changed, but yeah, it would be like, I mean, imagine if we'd done a Leicester, if you like, and we're in the Champions League now.
Yeah, that would be.
And we're having to watch Norwich versus Barcelona from home, whatever that would be.
Yeah.
It must be what Wycombe are going through now.
For them. We feel sorry for you, Wycombe, and your supporters.
Yeah.
I asked you this question a few episodes back when we were talking about Bournemouth in the Premier League. Similar question. I think it's good to have a small, less fashionable club like that in the Championship. We've had, top of my head, last few seasons, we've had Burton and we've had Yeovil, who actually played King's Lynn recently, so it shows how they've dropped. But there always seems to be one very unfashionable club at that level.
Yeah, no, that's it. And I totally agree. I mean, for me, the flow of teams up and down leagues is the lifeblood of football. And I love to see it. Love to see Wycombe there. It's also great for us as well as fans. I mean, I don't go to as many away games as I would like to, but maybe I can start, you know, when things improve. I'd try and make a bit more effort. But you know, going to places like Old Trafford, which we've been to, it's great. Don't get me wrong.
A little bit sanitised, would you say?
This is it. Yeah. I mean, like, when we went away to Peterborough in the FA Cup a couple of years ago.
You loved that, didn't you?
That was a great experience. Like, you go to the real grounds. Like, when we're in League One, doing some of the away games there.
Yeah.
It's more fun, but when it's new, you don't quite know it, and it's a bit more of a sort of genuine football league experience. Yeah, it's great fun. So personally, I love getting these, I'm not going to say smaller teams, but these less fashionable, more unusual sides in the league. It's great. I think it's fantastic.
I think you're spot on. I remember a lot of City fans were looking forward to that League One campaign purely on that basis, in that it opened up a whole host of places that they'd never been, grounds that they'd never been.
Yeah.
A real sort of grassroots feel to watching football. Went to Old Trafford last season, and yeah, it was a little bit disappointing, to be honest. The whole pre-match experience.
Yeah.
Whether we've been spoiled, and because we've been there before, and you know, takes a bit of a shine off it. But
agree. The other thing as well, which I think my sister's pointed out, and she's right, is that we probably don't get the full experience when we go to Liverpool or Manchester or whoever, because we're not...
They're not up for it, are they?
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas when we go to Southend, when we're in League One, when we went to, you know, Yeovil, for example, like, a big side for that league.
Yeah.
Ipswich, to be fair to Ipswich, they're probably getting it now. And the home side's probably excited about seeing us and, you know, the chance to put a number on a Championship, sort of Premier League, sort of that sort of yo-yo level club is a big deal for them. And you do probably get the atmosphere and the people are up for it. So from that point of view, yeah, I think the big teams, it sometimes can be a little bit deflating going to the big sides.
Yeah, it doesn't help that we lose as well.
That's the thing.
Are we getting to the real truths here?
And when we win, it's brilliant. So I've been to Tottenham twice, once on the land.
He's not going to name drop the FA Cup again.
And the FA Cup, again. And
so it's the fourth episode in a row. Yeah. That's got mentioned.
So that'll come out a few more times. You weren't there, were you? I remember.
No, I couldn't make that
one. No, it was fantastic. But that's the thing. When you go and obviously you win, it's great. But more often than not, you don't. It's great to see the big stadiums, but it's often a disappointing experience overall. So it's great going to these little grounds. And it's the lifeblood for football. And the biggest mistake I think we could make is to either prevent promotion and relegation or start putting B teams, Man United B teams in the lower leagues. It's just
I've heard that about. Been mentioned a few times that these big clubs, they want their kids or their pros coming back from injury to play competitive football. So they're
exactly.
And sadly, if they probably could play B teams that would walk the Championship. So that's the strength for their squads, isn't it?
You know? Exactly. And so no one's going to want to turn out in a League Two game to watch, you know, Cheltenham get walked over by Man United B team.
There's
just no fun in that.
Yeah. This is going to be a bit different because...
We've never played them.
So that's the end. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
No, we have played them, fortunately. But we've only played them four times. By far the least of any of our rivals this season. Where previous episodes and future episodes, we're just going to dip into various games. Because it's only four games, we're going to look at every one.
Okay.
And to be fair, two of them have got a lot to talk about. It's quite a lot of context. So I'm going to kick off. The first time we ever played them, FA Cup third round, 8th of January 1994. That is the Mike Walker era. That's the UEFA Cup season. So, big season for us. I went to that one.
Good, yeah.
You weren't up for it, but at that stage.
I was revising.
Still with your school socks.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I was a student, actually. So I was, me and my mate and my brother went down in his mini. Again, like you talked about before, I remember there being a lot of excitement around that game because it was an opportunity to stand on the terraces again. It was a new team that we'd never played before. The FA Cup was obviously bigger back then.
Yeah.
So a huge away following went down to Wickham, a proper big occasion. But there, a bit of backdrop to that game, it was the first game after the Mike Walker reign. Obviously, under him, we had a year and a half of constant joy and success.
Yeah.
And it obviously came to a head. A bit sad in the way how it ended. We didn't match his ambition. I think he wanted to invest in the side that was doing well. Problems then arose. His relationship deteriorated with the chairman, Robert Chase. Everton came in. You know, we talk about Everton. They were a few levels up in terms of ambition and potential, and he took it. So there was that backdrop to the game. he got some stick in the away end. He got a lot of stick in the away end, which I thought was a bit harsh, really.
Okay.
I don't know what your thoughts were on the Mike Walker reign. I know it's very early in your Norwich days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I remember it was as I was becoming aware of football, like after 1991 onwards, really, is when I started becoming aware of it, 1991. And I remember watching us in Europe, and that season we qualified for Europe as well. And those beautiful triangles we used to play all over the pitch, how we used to move the ball around. And even as a youngster, I could see, you know, we were a seriously good side back then. It's always hard, isn't it, when a manager moves on to what is perceived to be bigger and better things.
Yeah.
So obviously, fair play to Mike Walker. I personally have got no problems with people moving on to bigger sides.
Yeah.
So I don't really remember in enough detail how it happened.
Yeah.
How angry or fall. I know because Paul Lambert, for example, left in quite in a cloud, didn't he? Managed to fall.
Yeah, I suppose it was. That's a good comparative. I think there was a little bit of that, but I think I've got this theory that you can judge how popular a player or manager is by the level of stick that they get when they leave.
Yeah.
I don't know if you buy into that as well.
Okay, so I think it's probably true. So like Paul Lambert got absolutely pelters for years afterwards, didn't he? It's got to a point. Okay, it started calming down, then he joined Ipswich. Yeah. It didn't do much for his case.
Yeah.
But you know what? I remember like when Paul Lambert left, it was the most devastated I'd been about a manager or player leaving for a long, long time. But I thought,
because of the journey that we'd been on.
Yeah. And I remember, actually, ironically, we beat Villa the last game of the season, didn't we, before he left?
Yeah.
And I remember, I think we finished 10th for
Liverpool. It was the worst secret in the footballing world, wasn't it, that game?
And we came, it was big time. I think we finished 11th that season. And I remember actually coming out the ground feeling a bit empty because I thought, this is it. This is the best we're going to do for a long time.
And you're right.
And it was.
We were better the season after.
We were actually. I think we finished 12th, didn't we? And the next season we finished 11th, but 3 points fewer. But I didn't have any problems with Lambert leaving in itself because Villa are a bigger side than us. It's one of those things I don't buy into particularly. But I mean, Villa have got a lot going for them. Potentially have got a lot going for them. Yeah. It didn't work out, and maybe they weren't in as good a position as we were. But I can totally understand why he went.
And for Villa, replace them with Everton. It's exactly the same context, isn't it?
And Everton are a big side. They've got the potential to be a big side.
Yeah. I think we said this before. What you've got to remember, these guys, Mike Walker, Paul Lambert, they're not born and bred Norwich fans.
Yeah.
You know, they've got an affinity to the club because of what they've done.
Exactly.
But why should they stay at the club? They don't own the club anything, do they?
Right.
And I think the Mike Walker thing, it was... He knew we were very, very close to not dominating the league, but challenging for the title.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that opportunity doesn't come around very often.
Yeah.
And I think he sensed the crown jewels were going to be sold and the team was going to be broken up, and he kind of, left under a bit of a cloud.
Yeah.
Wasn't nice. And the stick, he got a lot of stick. I remember some of the chants and the boozer before the game.
So this is away at Wickham, is it?
Away at Wickham, yeah. So, the first game after it. I think he probably left on the Wednesday.
Okay.
He played Wickham on the Saturday.
He wasn't there, but it's just directed
he'd gone.
Direction, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The game itself, business as usual, there was two goals from Chris Sutton, two assists, I think, from Rule Fox.
Yeah.
It all unravelled, really, from that point onwards. I think we stumbled for the rest of the season. And after Wickham away, it was never quite the same, I don't think. But there's sorry for.
No, I was just going to say I don't remember it, so I'll take you for it, yeah.
I could be making all this up.
Yeah, could be, yeah.
Setting you up for embarrassment.
You could have said it was a fibre card, you know. Well, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. There's another subplot that day. Wickham's manager was a former Norwich City player who then, end of following season, became our manager. So after we got relegated in 95, he joined us from Wickham.
Oh, Martin O'Neill.
Yes. Yeah. So you do know a bit about that.
I remember that, yeah.
Martin O'Neill, massive success at Wickham, led them into the Football League for the first time, achieved back-to-back promotions. But he was also, he also had some history with Norwich. He was a key part of our 81-82 promotion winning season, played for us in the First Division the following season. A combination of his connections and his obvious ambition it seemed like the perfect appointment when he came to lead our promotion campaign. Now, again, this might be before your memory, but do you remember how the O'Neill era panned out?
I remember him leaving to Leicester, and it was the day that we played Leicester, wasn't it? Or the same.
Yes, yeah.
And there was, and he kind of took Ely with him, and maybe Keith O'Neill, was it? Or even, no, he definitely took Ely with him, didn't he?
Yeah, he took Spencer Pryor.
Yes, that's it. I think it was Spencer Pryor. And I remember, because the game was on TV, wasn't it? Which was still more of a rarity that day.
Yeah,
so we were fairly successful under him, but fairly limited time. He wasn't here long with us, was he?
Yeah, well done, Fal. You do know your stuff. He left, I think, November of that year, so 4 or 5 months into the campaign.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
I think we were second when he left. Mm-hmm. So he started the season very well under him. Everything was going well. But it was that old chestnut of his ambition wasn't matched by the Norwich chairman or the Norwich board. I think you've probably heard that tale a few times.
And from a lot of clubs as well, to be fair, not just Norwich.
No. It reached a head over, he wanted to sign Dean Windass.
Right, okay, yeah, Dean Windass, yeah.
The old...
still gets linked now, doesn't he, every transfer window, yes.
He scores for Hull, actually, in the playoff final and played in the Premier League with Hull.
Yeah.
He was a youngster at Aberdeen at the time, and O'Neill was keen to bring him in. The chairman wasn't having any of it. And you can imagine Martin O'Neill, he stands his ground, doesn't he? He's not going to, you know, not going to budge. And he reached ahead and walked, which is a bit of a shame. So that one game against Wickham has got lots of link in terms of two of our most well-respected and popular managers. Sadly, it didn't work out for either of them with us because, they both ended up going to pastures new.
Yeah.
Although Mike Walker did come back, didn't he?
He did for briefly. A fairly unsuccessful return. Often the way, isn't it? Like sometimes the returns never quite pan out as you'd planned them to or hope they would.
No. Would you come back?
Would I come back?
Yeah, if you had already left.
To Norwich, it depends on the wage. You know, like Gareth Bale's obviously on his way back to Tottenham for like 600 grand a week. You know,
that makes a difference, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think we're talking about it today, weren't we? My ideal job would be like third choice keeper. I quite like
that. Yeah, I would love to. He's a big fan of sitting on the bench collecting the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can't blame them, can you?
No, so if Norwich want a third choice keeper, want to send one, you know, one of the young lads out on loan, I'll come do the job, you know.
There he goes. He's desperate. He's been a come and get me plea.
Six K. I'll do it for 6K. I don't want 600. 6K.
Do it for £6.
Yeah.
The next two games versus Wickham are in your era now, Fal. So no excuses here. Whoa. Pressure on. The only time we've ever played them in the league before was the League One campaign. Now, do you remember the first meeting? It was at home. It was early doors. It was the 22nd of August, 2009. It was a memorable game because it was the first official game of the Paul Lambert dynasty.
Right.
And if I give you the score, you might remember it. We beat them 5-2. It also marked the first goals, or the first Carrow Road goals for Grant Holt, first league win of the season. Yeah, a massive game. Do you recall it?
Yeah, I do recall it, actually. And I remember...
This would have been your second experience as a season ticket holder, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's another game. When was the 22nd of August, did you say?
Yeah, so we played...
So we played, obviously, Colchester at home.
Yeah, we had Exeter away.
And then Yeovil in the FA, in the League Cup, didn't we?
Away. But then we played Brentford away.
Right, that's my thing.
And this was then it was Wickham at home.
I think the Brentford game was quite a dull one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do remember that. I remember thinking, okay, season started now, because that was some turnaround from the Colchester game.
Yeah, what a swing, 7-1 to 5-2.
And obviously with the Colchester, we won 5-1 at theirs as well, the same season or something. So that was, I remember thinking that's quite a turnaround and a fairly convincing winner. I don't really...
Can you remember how you felt going into Carrow Road that day after, obviously, the last time as the 7-1?
Well, the results were unspectacular up until that point. So I actually felt, after the Colchester game, you go to every league...
I think things had stabilised.
But I remember it being sort of fairly... Obviously, you go into any league season hoping it's going to be successful.
Yeah.
And the fact is, no matter where you finish the season beforehand, if you're any league outside of Premier League, you're hoping you're going to be top six minimum. Like, it does not matter who you are.
Yeah.
Right? You always think that you can make the playoffs. And, you know, so that... League One season was no different. If I thought we'd win the league going into it, and obviously after the Colchester game, I just remember thinking, "Wow, okay, that's a wake up call."
Be happy to stay in the league.
So I just thought I felt a bit freer. I'd lost those early season ambitions and fears of, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, "Well, we'll just see what happens." But then the Wigan game came. I remember watching it, thinking, "Okay, maybe we're back in now." And Grant Holt, yeah, I remember Grant Holt scoring, and I just remember thinking, "Okay, well, maybe it's not going to be so bad after all."
So your first two games, season to Calder, you saw 7-1, 5-2, 8+7.
8-7,
15. 15, phew. 15 goals.
Yeah.
Did you realise that at the time?
Well, I did just now.
Yeah.
After me and you were like, hang on, 8. Hey, yeah. We know this one.
7+1's 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then add another 7. No, hang on, go back.
Yeah. 15. Yeah. It's 15. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that register with you at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't stop, did it, really, under Paul Lambert for seasons. Like, whenever Paul Lambert was there, it was the highest scoring the whole time. And I think, actually, coming out, as I referenced earlier, under Lambert, coming out of the Villa game at home where it was Lambert's last game, I think that's why I felt so flat, because it wasn't just the fact that Lambert was inevitably going to leave. It was the fact that we're not going to get that football again. Like, it wasn't spectacularly pure
until Farker came along.
Well, yeah. This is it. So it wasn't that it was spectacularly pure football. He was very direct, Lambert, at times, but it was exciting and there's goals in it. There's never going to be a dull moment. I remember coming out thinking, yeah, it's not going to be like that. And Hughton, to be fair, had a hard old act to follow, didn't he? And we mentioned him in the Preston podcast.
We did.
I listened to it yesterday. And
I think it sounds like we're probably being a bit harshly critical of him. I think he did achieve some good stuff. Under Lambert, we weren't quite so solid, were we? And Hughton certainly sorted that side of our game out, made us stay in games longer.
In that first season.
More compact. Given us a platform. It's just we didn't quite have it.
We didn't spring off it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. And yeah, absolutely right. And so that's what I was sad about. And, you know, Hughton found it too hard to follow. And that was what ended it for him. It was just dull. So that's the thing. And I did feel very lucky to witness those goals. And that was a hell of a roller coaster to ride at the time. So.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the new manager bounce. I think we might have touched on this, but what's your theory behind sort of the whole Lambert appointment? It must have been a bit more than what he did in that Colchester Norwich game. I don't think they thought, oh, Colchester beat us 7-1, let's go after Paul Lambert. I imagine he was already on the radar. And how did you get that bounce? First game in, 5-2.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And I think David McNally made the very strong decision to get rid of Brian Gunn. And I think that he obviously had Paul Lambert earmarks. He'd done well at Colchester. And it felt like...
Was there any connections between the two? I've got a feeling there might have been. Maybe up in Scotland or...
Yeah, is at Livingston, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a connection there or not. That I don't know. It goes to show what difference a manager makes. But I actually felt that Norwich side was generally very good, actually. Even watching the Colchester game, I thought, we've got a strong squad here.
Yeah.
But bar one or two weak players. I mean, Michael Nelson looked poor against Colchester, but turned out to be a very good League One defender. The first thing Lambert did was ship out Fiacalitis, wasn't it?
Yeah. Fraser Forster was quality, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then we got Fraser Forster in. So the first thing, we got that sorted out. And I think Stephen Hughes sort of got shipped out of midfield and we got... So we had Russell in there, didn't we? And Wes Houlihan kind of got brought back in.
And he started playing the diamond, didn't he?
Yeah, so we had Daryl Russell, Houlihan, Martin and Holt, didn't we? And you're looking around the team thinking, actually, this is a very good League One side.
Yeah. Championship side.
As it proved to be, exactly. So I thought, looking around that, I thought, you know, the manager's coming in, it's just... I mean, I don't want to say Brian Gunn is an absolute Norwich legend, but the difference is Lambert was a manager and Gunn obviously wasn't. Gunn was just someone trying to help the club out.
Yeah, exactly. And I imagine it was quite hard for Brian Gunn to come in and make the tough decisions that it was easier for Lambert to do.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine he's a nice chap. And
yeah.
Not saying Lambert isn't, but I think Lambert probably had that. He didn't have that connection with the club, so he could come in and turn it around and make his own decisions and make hard decisions.
Yeah.
And then we doubled them that season. We beat them at their place, 2nd of Jan 2010. So by that time, we were well away. It was our third in 8 consecutive wins. Bonus point scorer that day?
I want to say Russell Martin, but
I'm going to give you a clue. He was the stalwart of your Football Manager team, a player you mentioned that you were very loyal to.
Oh, was it Corey Smith?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Corey, yeah, so yeah. That's another one he got in the midfield that Lambert brought in. Yeah, Corey Smith, yeah, who was one of my favourites on Football Manager. Still keeping an eye on him now. He was at Bristol, wasn't he, I think? Or...
Well, he was. He was released in the summer, and I don't believe he's... I don't know if he's found another club.
I'll have a look at that. He was certainly one of those players which I loved.
You would have seen a lot more of him than I did. What? Yeah, give me an overview of him as a player.
Well, I found him, I thought he was a very good midfielder for the Championship level. He was one of those players that simply Norwich grew faster than he did, really.
Yeah, so he was an academy lad, was he?
Exactly, yeah. Came through the academy. He was one of those players which, was at Swansea, that's where he is now.
Okay,
yeah. He's one of those lads which Lambert plucked out the reserve side, got him in the side, sort of made that midfield more solid. It's a good, solid midfielder, good passer, good tackler, you know, worked hard, unspectacular, which is why he's never going to be a Premier League footballer. He wasn't at that level.
Yeah.
But wished him well, and it's always good to see his name.
Well, he was popular at Bristol. Yeah, very popular. I think they were sad to see him go, so that does say a lot about him.
Yeah.
He scored the winner, beat them, so that season beat them 5-2 and 1-0. And then to complete the set, so we played them in the FA Cup, we played them in the league, so we just need the League Cup.
Yep.
The EFL Cup, whatever it's called, to complete the set.
Yep.
And that happened on the 25th of September 2018, one of our all-time favourite seasons. Can you remember the game and the score?
Yeah, I can remember the game. It was high scoring. Jordan Rhodes got a hat-trick, I believe.
He did, yeah.
I can't remember the score. I don't know. They scored a few, didn't they, as well?
It was 4-3 to us. It was away. I would say this typified Norwich under Farr during that season. So obviously lots of goals at both ends. I think we went 4-1 up at one stage and they brought it back to 4-3, but we saw it over the line.
Yeah.
You're right. There was a hat-trick for Jordan Rhodes, who very popular, wasn't he? This is a good chance to get your views on him during that season. I think he was popular because you sensed he was a club man. He was good in the changing room, good personality to have, very supportive. But more importantly, he could score, couldn't he? He scored some good goals that year. I remember, top of my head, he scored that absolute classic against Villa at home. Or did he score two?
He scored two against Villa. And he finished off, that tap-in, which was 20-odd passes, wasn't it? He passed it, that was my goal of the season, that was. Yeah, he scored some goals and scored some important ones. He scored late on in the Wickham game. Millwall game, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And then Pukki got the winner.
Another one I've remembered. He scored the equaliser away at West Brom.
Yeah, and again, a very clever striker's finish, that wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just got in the right space, side-footed it in from close range. You know, it's those goals which look so easy, but actually it's a striker of his quality which gets in that position. You always look at these players like Jordan Rhodes, and he just always seems to somehow be in space where the ball is in the box.
Yeah.
And he just don't know how he does it. So what I loved about Jordan Rhodes is he really bought into the team philosophy, didn't he? He really understood that he was a player in a team. It's not about him.
He would have expected to have been the main man, I think, when he started that season. I think when he came on loan, he would expect it to be the number 9.
Yeah, and I think we all did.
Yeah.
And I think against West Brom at home, he missed a penalty, didn't he? I think he scored as well, but he missed a penalty. He definitely missed a penalty that game. And I think Pukki was playing wider that day. And it was quite a vital moment. I think it was 1-1 or something like that. They would have put us 2-1 up before the break. There's something along those lines. And then we did a Norwich win concede. And then Tim Krull made one of his early season howlers, which became a little bit of a feature, but obviously he got over and became a top quality goalkeeper, which we knew he was, really. But yeah, so he kind of then found himself in and out of the team when Pukki was neither support or injured. But he really bought into the whole team philosophy. He knew his role. He was happy to play it.
Yeah.
And fair play to him. And I think that's why the crowd loved him so much. Never complained. He just got on and did what he could whenever
did
he could.
Did you sense a popularity from the Barkley End faithful? Or
We loved him. Yeah. I mean, he did also, actually. He did miss a couple of chances against Derby at home, actually, I seem to remember. When we lost 4-3 or 3-2. Yeah. He missed a sitter, right at the last kick. I think it was about a yard out, and he hit the other side of the crossbar with it.
Yeah. Would you have taken him into the Premier League? I mean, obviously, I'm sure we could have afforded him.
I would have, but as we discussed, I'm a deeply flawed manager.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably a sensible thing not to have done. I mean, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, if you look back on it now, would he have been worse than Drimmich? No, probably not. Because you know what you're going to get from him. It's going to be a fox in the box. If it comes his way, he's going to tuck it in more often than not. He's going to find space, isn't he? Drimmich never had that. I don't want to state Drimmich, but I didn't really see what he was about, Drimmich. We didn't really get a sense of what he could do.
No, it just never happened, did it, I think?
Yeah, so I probably, and he seemed to create a really good atmosphere, didn't he? A really good team vibe around him. So from that point of view, it wouldn't have done any harm.
We almost had the same conversation about you and Roberts in the Preston episode,
exactly.
Didn't we?
Exactly,
and we both said, yeah, we would have definitely taken Roberts. Yeah. Same with Rhodes. I can't see what harm it would have done.
No, you'd have taken him as well, would you?
Yeah, 100%.
We'd have got him for a few million, wouldn't we? Not decent money, but not in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, he would have been relatively cheap. And would you have made the difference? I doubt he would in terms of us staying up. But the problem was when Pukki's goals dried up, that was it.
Yeah.
And that's when we would have needed someone like a Rhodes to have come on and taken the burden. And
yeah, a defined and well-known plan B as well. We knew what he was about, didn't we?
Yeah, you like your plan Bs, don't you? Plan Cs?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is it. So sometimes you need another option. And the team knew him. And we didn't really have a plan B, to be fair. But, you know, if we just get the ball on the box, he'll make something happen.
Yeah,
Something, you know.
And is he still at Sheffield Wednesday?
I'll double check that as well.
I was checking this out.
I don't actually know. I've got a
live update.
I've got a feeling he is, actually. Let's have a quick look. This is live. So it's, of course, it's still at Sheffield Wednesday. Yep.
Yeah. Do you think that ship's passed now? Probably has, hasn't it?
I'd have said so.
Yeah, we've obviously got
Huggins and Ida coming through.
But, yeah, really popular player. And obviously he got the hat-trick in that game against Wickham. And I think that shows what good character he is, because it'd be easy for someone like him to sulk coming into these League Cup games. You know, we're playing well in the Championship and he's brought into Wickham away.
Yeah.
But he obviously didn't. Got the hat-trick and very popular player. So, final thoughts. We're going to be clear favourites. Do you prefer being an underdog, Fowl, or do you like being a favourite?
I don't mind, really. It doesn't bother me either way. I just don't think they're very accurate in a Championship. I think when we came up last season and won it, I think we're more likely to have gone down, weren't we, really?
Yeah.
According to the pundits. The betting firms. I think the Championship is so hard to predict that us being favourites means very little. And I think we're only favourites because we've signed a lot of players, but don't really know what they're like yet. Like, Skip seems a good signing. But
we know nothing about the Wickham players, do we? I mean, I don't feel like I can name any of their starting 11 apart. They've got that big lad, haven't they, up front?
Yeah, he's an absolute beast. And he's one of those players. I mean, I reckon he scored against us that game, didn't he, in the League Cup?
Probably, yeah.
I know he came on.
Yeah.
And it's physical presence at the end of the day. It's very hard to deal with, isn't it? So you don't know what's going to happen to Wickham. Likewise, Norwich, really. But sounds like Wickham are having a hard start to life so far.
It does, yeah. Four games, four wins. Our only 100% record versus all our Championship friends this season. 12 goals scored, 5 conceded. Unblemished record.
Good.
Against them. Yeah, so we move on to the score predictions.
Okay.
We've now got 2 games to get a feel for the form of each side. And like you say, Wickham have had a tough start. I think they lost their first game.
Yeah.
And they obviously got fresh this afternoon. We've got a win and a draw. I always say, do you know if it's home or away?
I'd ask you that, actually. So,
oh, no.
So I'm feeling confident.
When am I going to start making a note?
Yes. This is where all the preparation comes in, which we do. No,
well-oiled machine, isn't it?
No, I think that we'll do all right against them, actually. I think we'll be, by this point in the season, we'll start hitting our straps.
Yeah.
And I think we'll win. So I'm going to go 4. So that is at home. So I'm going to go 3-0 to us.
3-0. I think this could be a big one. So I'm going to go, this could be a 5-0.
5-0. Okay, yeah. So we're going wins, confident wins.
Going confident wins. Should I give us this complicated spreadsheet I've built? Huddersfield, you went for 3-1 defeat. I went for a 2-0 win, so I get a point. Okay. You've still got a clean sheet. Preston, Fowl went for the draw, 1-1, so you pick up a point there. I went for a 2-1 to us, so I get nothing. So, we're 1-1.
We're 1-1.
And that's it. So, like I say, we're all media or social media savvy now. We have the Twitter page, we have the Facebook page. What else do the kids like these days?
Snapchat, possibly. Snapchat. I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
So, we're not on that.
Pictures of us, is it?
We could do Instagram if you like, but we haven't yet. So, we can find us on Facebook and on Twitter.
So, the possibilities are endless, are they?
And they are. And just to keep you updated about the discussion from today's game on Twitter, no one has replied or liked our tweet yet. So we'll leave that for another day.
Well, we are triers, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon. Thank you.